This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Our guest today is pound for pound, one of the best footballers in the world. At 5'2" tall, she's been a key part of a United States back four that hasn't allowed a World Cup goal in a staggering 423 minutes. She's a proud Pittsburgh native that may or may not soon be a sandwich named after her at Pimenti Brothers before this World Cup is over, a Taekwondo black belt, and a player the LA Times declared to be a pixie-sized ray of sunshine. We welcome to this World Cup semi-final pod special, ahead of Tuesday night's semi-final against Germany, the mighty Megan Klingenberg.
Well, thank you. That was quite the introduction.
Oh, you're quite the player. I've got to congratulate you on the quarterfinal victory against China. You guys didn't just win. It looked like you were enjoying your football as a team again, Megan.
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. We had such a blast playing in that game, and I think everybody could kind of sense it and feel how much fun we had because we were playing great. We were putting good pressure on the Chinese defense, and we, you know, made some quality attacks. And, you know, if we get a few more goals in, then that's just kind of like the perfect performance.
I mean, it wasn't just a win. You look like a different team, so much more mobile against China. The partnership of Alex Morgan, Amy Rodriguez up top, Tobin Heath running free, Carly Lloyd in an advanced role. Can you describe how does their speed and movement ahead of you change what goes through your mind when you get the ball and you're charging forward into your opponent's half?
Well, it makes my life so much easier. I was so thankful there's so much movement because when there's movement, it attracts the eye. So whenever I see a player moving, it catches my eye, and then it makes the decision easy for me, and it makes the decision extremely tough for the defense. So whenever there's movement, I'm so thankful, and it's really great for our attack because I know it's just going to make it so much harder on the opposing team's defense.
I mean, talking about defense, your defense, your back line, you're probably sick of us all talking about it. 0.18 goals against average in the 11 starts your back four has had together. That's stingier than Tom Barrasso. But at this World Cup, as good as she is, Hope Solo just 6 saves in the last 4 games, only one of which was from inside the box. That is stellar defending, however you cut it. Great defences, they need a vocal leader, a John Terry, a Vonson company. Between you, Krieger, Becky Sauerbrunn and Julie Johnston, who's doing all the talking and what are they saying?
It's absolutely everybody talking back there. There's not just one voice. So Becky's giving direction to me, and then I'm giving direction to my outside midfield. So if we can move out the pieces and the players that we need to move, then we know that it makes our lives that much easier, and we can attack out of a much better starting position than down in our own 18. And that's kind of what we've been focusing on. And that comes from the whole back line. It comes from Hope, who's actually extremely hard to hear because the crowds have been so loud. But it comes from Hope, it comes from Becky and Julie, and then it kind of trickles out to me and Krieger, who then, you know, talk to the people in front of us.
By the way, you laughed when I said it's probably sick of talking about the 423 minutes. Do you get irritated by people talking about the US scoreless streak? Does it, in an odd way, does it create more pressure?
No, I think it's just funny that people are calling it a streak. I'm just calling it good defense. I'm just calling it good team shape, and it's something that we're proud of, but it's not a streak because this is something that we've been practicing for a year. It's been a focus of our coaching staff. It's been a focus of our team, and we knew it's something that we needed to be incredibly good at to win the World Cup, and so this is kind of the fruits of our labor paying off, I think. So I think it's great that people are talking about it, and I love that people think that we're doing a good job, but it's just kind of something that we've been focusing on, and I'm just happy that we're able to produce in games and at, you know, at such an opportune time.
So we won't call it a streak. We won't call it good defense. We'll call it bloody good defense, if you don't mind, Megan.
Okay,
but
I like that.
There's a reason you've had bloody good defense, and I want to take you back to 1 minute. Fujikao, the 77th minute of the game against Sweden. The US are not really convincing. It's 0-0. Caroline Seager loops that ball towards the American net. For once, Hope Solo's stranded. But there you are, all 5'2" of you, leaping up, crouching tiger, hidden Klingenberg. And you head you head that ball away. Afterwards, you said, I was only doing my job. But your job is, to us, it's superhero, Megan. You're like Carol Danvers. What emotions do you experience from the second the ball comes towards you through contact to when Megan Rapinoe loops it away? Describe to us mortals what goes through your mind.
Well, I'm on the front post, and then as it comes across, I know that I need to slide in because Hope slides over. And then I see the ball coming right at me, and I'm like, oh, I better get this. So I just jumped up. Luckily, it went off the crossbar and went out, but it's really funny because a fan, this is my favorite, I guess, meme that somebody had sent me, but I don't know if you know anything about Pittsburgh sports and Pittsburgh football, but there is a play that's called the Immaculate Reception.
It's why I live in America, Megan.
Okay, wonderful. So the Immaculate Reception, and this fan from Pittsburgh, you know, put the picture up there, and they actually wrote the Immaculate Deflection, which I thought was just so funny. And that's kind of how I felt. It was like, okay, you know, we got this. We got that out of there. It was a little hairy, but then we moved forward and, you know, we closed out the game and got the result that we needed.
Oh, Franco Harris wishes he could jump that high, Megan. I love watching you play. Let's talk about you for a minute. You're my favorite yinzer in world football. You read the game. You read the game so well. ESPN's Paul Carr, I was chatting to him this morning, and he blew my mind. He told me you're second on the US team in touches and passes completed. But alongside the tactical play and intelligence, you've got this grit. You love to hit like Troy Polamalu. You lead the team with 12 tackles and 19 passes intercepted. And I read this piece in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, which I read every day, whether I'm interviewing you or not, Megan. And you talk about how when you were six, you were so bad at football that when you subbed in, you heard a teammate say, "Don't put Megan in. We'll lose." Well, I love the humanity of this story, and I know a lot of our young listeners will love it too. What happened to you in your life that transformed your play? And at what age did you realize you were world-class?
That's kind of a hard question to answer just because I was so young. But what I know about myself and what I've known since I was little is that I love to win and I love to be good at things. And if I'm not good at things, I don't enjoy them. So when I was little and I was bad at soccer, I told my mom, I was like, maybe I should just stick to softball, Mom. And she was totally down for that. But all my friends, they played soccer. And so I was like, well, I want to be with my friends. I want to play with my friends. And so I know that I needed to be better. And I think there was this kind of switch that clicked like around 8 or 9 years old where I just realized I needed to be more aggressive and, you know, get in there and rough it up with the girls, and that's kind of where it started changing. And then by 12 years old, my team won state cup, and then we went to regionals and did really well at regionals. And I was like, you know what? Our team's pretty good at this. We're pretty decent. And we had no idea. We had no idea we were good. We were just playing the sport that we loved, and that's kind of where it started, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you think of hotbeds of young youth football in this country. You think New Jersey, you think North Carolina, you think California, Pittsburgh. I mean, you've changed the map of that, but as a 15-year-old, you were cut from a regional Olympic development program. I read that you taped the rejection letter to your bedroom mirror so you could read it every day. What did that do for a 15-year-old sense of self to read a rejection letter over and over again?
I guess it's kind of like a little humbling, and that's what I always wanted to make sure that I was, humble and hungry. And that reminded me every day of why I went out there and why, because you don't want to get up out of bed every day and go run sprints or go play by yourself. It's not exactly the most fun doing technical touches alone on the field in the middle of nowhere while nobody's watching you, but that's something that I would do, and that's something that I would want to do because of that letter and because of how much it hurt when I knew that I wasn't a part of that team. So from that moment forward, I made a decision that, you know, I didn't think that anybody, this was my mindset, is I was like, I know nobody knows that I can do it, nobody thinks that I can do it, but I know that I can do it. And that's just kind of the reminder. It was like, listen, this letter, these people, they don't think that you're good enough, they don't think that you'll ever be good enough, but you do. So keep it up there, and I wanted to remind myself every day that, you know, you are good enough, and you can do it as long as you you know, are putting in the time and the effort that you need to.
Oh, well, that has paid off and then some. You now play club football for the Houston Dash. There was a great USA Today article that told the story of how you and fellow US international Morgan Bryan, when you're in season as part of the host family program in Houston. Who do you live with, Megan?
I live with the Van Gundys. And man, oh, let me tell you, they are just the best.
You're talking about Jeff Van Gundy, the great Jeff Van Gundy, great bald Jeff Van Gundy. Go on, tell us. This sounds like a sitcom, but it's true. Tell us a surprising thing about Jeff Van Gundy that no one else knows.
I'll tell you what, we should probably have our own reality show because we have pretty interesting life down there in Houston. It's pretty funny. We have pancake Sundays, as you have probably read in the article, and we'll make pancakes and bacon and, you know, slice off some fruit, and then we'll just kind of hang out with the family and eat in the morning. And some of our conversations get so funny. We talk about our roller derby names, what they would be. Because roller derby, they were having this really big roller derby tournament in Houston, and we all wanted to go. So we were talking about, you know, what the youngest one, Grayson's roller derby name would be, and we came up with Chase and Grayson. And then for Morgan Bryan, we came up with Mo Money, Mo Problem. And for Kim Van Gundy, we came up with Kim and Hot. So we came up with a bunch of ones, and that's kind of where our conversations steer. And it's really, really fun, and we have a blast.
You're much nicer. Van Gundy only rhymes with Ted Bundy in my mind, so I'm going to steer away from that conversation.
Yeah, did he steer clear of that avenue.
That would be a terrible roller derby name. But did Jeff, in all seriousness, did Jeff Van Gundy pass on any advice to you that's helped your career?
He's a really awesome guy in the sense of, you can just tell how smart he is about the game of basketball, but a really good coach at a high level kind of transfers over and surpasses the boundary of just their sport. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So when we talk, it's really interesting because he probably asks more questions than even I do, because I think that's really the sign of a really good coach and somebody that wants to learn more about coaching in the game and how we do things. So what I've learned from him is to ask questions and to be curious, and to, when you get to be with people who are really successful at something, to ask them how, you know, what they do, just about details, small things. He'll ask about, we do check-ins with Dawn every morning about how we're feeling, how tight our legs are, how hydrated we are, those type of things. And he wants to know all about that because they've never done that in the NBA. So, that's kind of what I take away from him, is just to be curious and to ask questions and to kind of find out what makes them tick and what makes them good.
To be curious, again, the thing I love about you, there's an intelligent side to your play, but there's also that physical side. And a lot of that has come from your third degree black belt in Taekwondo. You're deadly with the long staff, the short staff. You're the female's Latan. A question from we're getting to the nunchucks, because a question from a listener, and there's some great video on the US Soccer's website of you working the nunchucks and beating up Aaron Heifetz, the PR staffer for US Soccer. At AndrewSide89 wants to know, Megan, do you carry around the nunchucks in tournament? Do they help you de-stress post-game?
I wish. I'm not sure that I could get them through customs, though.
Oh, it's Canada. They're very legal about that thing. Yeah, you once said, it's a great quote, one of my favorite footballing quotes of all time, you said, there are people on this team who could take me in hand-to-hand combat, but I would win on pure fury. How would you take one back?
I've actually thought about this before, because, you know, practices, they get pretty intense, and sometimes you have to get out of things pretty quickly, and my key is, if Abby's coming in hard, you gotta poke the ball away and get out of her way, because when she's coming in hard, she's coming in hard. So I think that's probably how I would approach a Taekwondo battle with Abby. It's probably hit and run.
Yeah.
Try and make sure she would never catch me.
It would involve nunchucks. I've got no doubt. It would get
it would
down to the nunchucks.
It would involve nunchucks.
Germany away in the semifinals. The world's top two teams colliding Tuesday night on Fox. It's a US lockdown defense against the tournament's most potent offense. You're going to be facing not just one, but two of the top scorers in the World Cup, Germany's Celia Sasic and Anja Mittag. They've got 11 goals between them, four more than the seven goals US have managed total. Are you going to try and soak up the German pressure and play on the counter, or go toe-to-toe, fire with fire, nunchuck to nunchuck?
Well, first of all, I'm so excited to play on Tuesday. I think it'll be a great matchup with two really great teams. But what I think key is for our defense is to absolutely absorb and shut down their attack as fast as possible and make sure that we're getting pressure on the ball immediately. I think we did a great job against China in that sense, and I think that we can do that again. I want to make sure that we can organize and win the ball in really good spots so we can attack quickly. And I think that'll be pretty key for us being able to be successful against Germany.
English broadcaster Gary Lineker once said, it's a famous adage and all too true, sadly, in England. He said, football is a simple game. 22 players chase a ball for 90 minutes. And at the end, the Germans win. I mean, you've been watching game film with the Germans. Hopefully it's felt a little bit like watching Das Boot. What have you seen in the game film that gives us hope for the United States?
Yeah, they're a great team. They move the ball quickly and they move it with purpose. And I think that obviously they have some weaknesses that we need to be able to exploit, and we want to be able to, you know, get the ball in good spots. And so whenever we do get them in good spots, we can make good decisions going forward and breaking down their back line. So it kind of starts with the defense. And that, by that I mean we need to be able to organize our midfielders and our forwards quickly and in good shape, so we can win the ball in their half as opposed to trying to win it on our 18 and then breaking them down for 120 yards. Because if we can win it in their half that much closer to goal, I think that that'll be pretty key for us going into this game.
Critical question America wants to know. Have you been practicing your penalties, Megan?
Yeah, of course. That's big time.
Thank you, God.
If you're not practicing your penalties, I think that that is just reckless. And we want to be prepared for everything. Obviously, we want to win this game, and we want to win it within regulation. That's our number one goal. But if it does come down to penalties, then we've been practicing, and we're prepared.
Some unsolicited advice that you didn't ask for, but it's my favorite penalty advice. It came from Jürgen Klinsmann when he was the 2006 Germany coach. He told his team to kick the ball as hard as they could on penalties, because if they didn't know where it was going, the goalkeeper wouldn't either. But we'll move on. Last question for you, Megan. Last question. If things go well at this World Cup, and we believe they are going to go very well, we're already hard at work on the World Cup movie, casting it. We've got a lot of big names attached. It started when Megan Rapinoe told us we should get Tilda Swinton to play her. Heather O'Reilly, we decided, our listeners said, Jennifer Garner would be playing her. Kelly O'Hara chose Kate Mara. And Becky Sauerbrunn wants Elizabeth Banks to play the anchor role. But for you, I mean, a lot of our listeners have said Kristen Bell, Emily Blunt, Emma Watson. I'd actually go Michelle Yeoh or Gong Li. But who would play Megan Klingenberg in the movie Victory?
Oh, this is such a good question. I would have said Amanda Bynes, but I'm going to probably put that on the back burner for now. But I actually saw your question on Twitter, and I saw a few of the answers, and they were hilarious. But my favorite one was Juno, Ellen Page. I just think that we have kind of the same sense of humor, and she would just be hilarious in the movie. And that's definitely who I would choose.
Calls will be made. Agents will be activated. I'm also going to put out feelers on my own to Leighton Baines to see if he wants the part. But I've got to say to you, Megan Klingenberg, all of our listeners join me in thanking you for the super heroic performances we've savoured thus far. May they continue Tuesday night and beyond. Please pass our finest onto your teammates. No sleep till Vancouver. Godspeed.
Thanks so much. It's been a blast.